And with that, the first off-season domino has fallen here for the Indianapolis Colts. I'm Kevin Bowe and Eddie Garrison back with us, as always, Kevin's Corner. Appreciate you guys tuning in. We know that March Madness is about to begin, and with the franchise tag window coming to a close, we did get that news item just before the deadline yesterday, and that is the non-exclusive tag to Michael Pittman Jr. So we'll focus on that to lead off today's podcast. A couple lingering thoughts from the NFL Combine I want to hit after that. And then Eddie, as always, I'd say, we got a few more Twitter questions than we've had in recent pods.
Mm-hmm.
We'll toss that in there. How you doing, man?
Doing well. How are you?
Good. Good, good, good.
Loving the PBR hat, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, actually, I think the man that you produced the show for, Jake Query, got me this hat. Yeah, it's a nice crisp logo, isn't that?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very good looking logo on it. I don't know if the Pittman family was cheersing PBRs last night, but I don't know, $21 million for 1 year ain't bad. And now the real business begins. Again, not too surprised at all by the news item. I guess I'll start with just the broken record elements of the deal. Eddie, I've said it a million times. We'll make it a million one. If you want to play the game of risk, then you shortcut and you skimp at the skill positions. You aren't in a position to play some financial business war with a 21-year-old quarterback. That's playing with fire there, and I don't want to be the one touching the burners or testing out to see how hot it really is. So this just makes sense from that end. He's a number one here, and when you have Anthony Richardson, that matters a whole lot. The question at the end of the day is never going to be about, instead of paying him 25.5 annually, you should have paid him 22.5 annually. The question at the end of the day is going to be like, did you get Anthony Richardson right or not? That is the question. So, no realistic alternative if you let him walk. I think it's important too with Pittman Jr., Eddie, that there's no diva wideout with him. You know, if you're going to rank the diva-ness scale of wideouts around the league, he ranks near the bottom of that. I think that's an important message to send to Anthony Richardson. Yeah, I don't think GMs universally love their number one wideouts, if you catch my drift. You know, I don't know if they check all of the work ethic boxes. And you know, when you're trying to send a message and establish a culture and, you know, have a good role model, if you will, for your young QB, I think it's important that Pittman Jr. is that type of guy. Another element of this, and I've mentioned this probably about a month ago, I was a fan of the franchise tag for this reason. Offers you some flexibility. You've got some flexibility now here in the next month or so. Now, I'm not saying that the flexibility will necessarily be used, but I bring that up to say this, Eddie. I've got a specific time period that I would like to see the long-term deal get done for Michael Pittman Jr. It's about 2 months from now. Early May is where I'm going to pinpoint. Again, this is when I want to see it done. I'm not predicting.
Frickin' Bowen, right?
It's going to get done here. Thank you, Mr. Ballard, for that comment. But you know, why do I say early May? By giving Pittman the tag.
So it can be the Grand Marshal at the 500?
Well, yeah, maybe. He strikes me as a guy that would love the high nature of what that entails and the endless speed that you get there at the 2.5-mile oval. But you know, more than that, the fact that you didn't give him 4 years, $100 million, whatever, right now, it offers you a little bit of flexibility and openness to how you handle the rest of the offseason. And if all of a sudden a team calls, a deal falls into your lap, a surprise move that you didn't have mapped out in early March is there in mid-March, is there in early May, like that offers you the ability to be flexible and to adjust if necessary. I'm not holding my breath that is there, but it gives you a little bit of wiggle room. And once you get to early May, that's when I think that kind of stops. You know, for the most part, the big moves happen next week. They happen, you know, maybe in the month of March as it plays out. And then around the draft, we saw the A.J. Brown trade being you know, a prime recent example of that that happened the night of day one of the draft a couple years ago. So once you get to early May, that stuff is probably over. And then I also think it's important for Michael Pittman Jr. to participate in the offseason program. And it's voluntary. And if you have a contract that has zero guarantees contractually past 2024, why would you participate? So I think that matters. If Anthony Richardson's on the field for a dozen spring practices, I'd want my number one wideout out there for a dozen spring practices. These guys have not got, I mean, think of when you really, how many practices has Anthony Richardson had with Michael Pittman Jr. as the number one quarterback? 15 to 20?
Yeah.
I mean, what? You had the four games during an NFL season. There's three practices a week. There's 12. What'd you have in the month of August? I don't know. Maybe a little bit more than that. Maybe like 10. I kind of forget the exact date and when they named him officially the starter. But that's another benefit to early May. And then lastly, I think if you're Pittman's camp, you want to see the extensions for Justin Jefferson, for Ja'Marr Chase, for Jalen Waddle, for CeeDee Lamb, for Amon-Ra St. Brown. They want to see those extensions. If you're the Colts, I don't think you want to see them. So when they come in the summer, mm-hmm. I think ideally you'd have Pittman Jr. kind of locked up before that. Now, I get it's a two-way street, and you know Pittman Jr. can decide when he wants to sign that contract, but I do think that's an aspect to the rest of the offseason playing out when this long-term deal gets done that I'll be keeping an eye on.
Does it surprise you they went the route of non-exclusive franchise tag over the exclusive franchise tag?
Yeah, that is a good question.
Because the non-exclusive franchise tag pays you the top five at your position on average annually. And if a team
from the
offers,
last 5 years, correct.
And if a team offers Michael Pittman Jr. a contract and the Colts say, hey, we don't want to match this, then the Colts receive two first-round picks mm-hmm. from that other team.
Yeah, and obviously the Colts can match anything if they would like and retain Pittman Jr. I probably should have paid a little bit more attention to that avenue being used. Obviously, we saw it last year with Lamar Jackson. No team, of course, entertained it. I kind of look at it as it's the Colts saying to Pittman Jr., you've expressed interest to see what the market is out there. We want to keep you. This is how we try and achieve both of those things. We are keeping you. But if you want to see and you want to negotiate, and I say that in quotes because, again, why would teams seriously negotiate with two first-round picks when Chris Ballard has just talked about the wide receiver draft depth mm-hmm. like he did? You're going to pay and you're going to pay? And the and you're going to pay is two first-round picks. Honestly, there's part of me that sits there and thinks, damn, those two first-round picks might be really nice. if you want to look at it on that end, I still think the Richardson development is paramount. So, you know, having Michael Pittman Jr. makes a whole lot of sense there. But, yeah, what was Davante Adams traded for a couple years ago?
I don't even remember. He wasn't traded for a first-round pick, was he?
I thought for some reason didn't even match the multiple first-rounders. I think it was a substantial price, but I don't think it matched that. I mean, if Davante Adams in his prime is not going for that, Michael Pittman Jr., of course.
Tyreek Hill didn't go for that either.
Isn't going for that. Yeah, that is a good point. I thought I saw the stat yesterday that Joey Galloway back in 2000 is the last player to be under this tag and switch teams. Man, that's 24 years ago
mm-hmm.
when you look at it in that realm. So, again, I no one is doing that price. But I think, again, it's the Colts saying to Pittman Jr., all right, you want to see what your market is out there? Does it help you better negotiate? Maybe, if you're far apart. And, you know, at the end of the day, again, it's a two-way street with long-term deals. I mean, the client has got to sign it as well. So if he's not going to be happy with what's on the table, you know, you can't run the risk of letting him walk for some reason. So you have to tag him and give you that insurance policy. It is interesting to note, Eddie, like, I mean, the Colts are going to bring back, what, 98% of their pass catching? 90, I mean,
yeah,
Isaiah McKenzie and Zach Moss would be the two free agents at running back, wideout, or tight end. I mean, unless I'm forgetting somebody there. I mean, that's obviously...
Unless they make a cut.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe DJ Montgomery. So... They are bringing back a lot. Now, I say that to say that can't be enough. You have to
you know, double down. And I think at some point in the draft, you listen to Ballard's comments last week, they certainly will make a move there. But I am fine with it. I'm totally fine with the tag. And yeah, you Michael Pittman Jr. is not a perfect prospect. He's not some top five, top seven wideout in this league. It's not all pro, unquestionably. He's a really good football player. And at that position with a young quarterback, that's important. How he's wired, I think, is a positive impact on Richardson as well. So for all those reasons, this makes sense to me.
You have anything else to add to the Pittman conversation?
I got nothing on that. Again, we are a week away from free agency starting. Let the dominoes begin.
Before we get into some combine notes and takeaways, had some news yesterday with Andrew Ogletree. He's being dismissed of all the charges from when he was arrested and with the alleged domestic violence situation. And now he's still on the NFL exempt list. So the NFL will conduct their investigation into the situation and will determine if there needs to be a suspension, which in most cases, I feel like there is typically a suspension when it comes to anything domestic violence related, just because the NFL pretty much has like a, they don't want to put up with anything like that. So I don't know if you had anything else to add on that.
No, you know, I think when you heard Ballard talk about tight end last week, he kind of went down the depth chart and then he wouldn't say anything on Ogletree. And obviously this news happened, you know, after those comments. Obviously the NFL will do their own investigation. Like you said, there's plenty of cases where guys have still been suspended off of this. I'll be curious to see, you know, what the final verdict is from the Colts. You could probably make cases for both sorts of instances of, well, the legal process cleared everything. You don't, you know, touch it from a punishment standpoint. And then others would say, well, something did happen that night. What was your real investigation on it? Is there some sort of punishment that needs to be handed out there? Your tight end, I think, is such an interesting one. You know, you go back to those Ballard comments. You go back to Shane Steichen's comments from earlier in the week as he did his combine media availability this week because he was sick last week. I listened to it and think to myself, damn, Shane Steichen is talking about Brock Bowers without talking about him directly. And part of me wants to sit here and think, when Ballard throws in the caveat of we don't have a Kittle or a Kelsey, is he saying Brock Bowers would be that? I almost look at tight end and think this, Eddie. It's either Bowers or it's nothing this offseason. Like, and I don't say that about every need. Like, you hear Ballard talk about wideout. I think he's very honest and upfront about, I didn't help out Reggie Wayne enough last season at wideout. Like, he's going to do something at wideout. I don't think he just throws another guy into that tight end room just to do it, if that makes sense. Like, I think he's kind of done that in the drafts, and you hear him describe these guys individually. And this is assuming, I think, Ogletree is still on the team.
Yeah. And Jelani Woods is healthy.
Right, and I mean, he gushed about Jelani Woods in speaking to us. So, unless it's Bowers, I don't think they're just going to do something there. I could be wrong on that, but that's just kind of my inkling. Tight end wise. So, yeah, thank you for bringing up the Ogletree thing. I guess a couple other combine items that I had lingering. I thought two edge rushers really stamped top half of round one approval.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're there at 15, I think you take a long and hard look at it. The wingspan of Dallas Turner is eye popping. You know, when you've got the Alabama dude with pretty impressive production and then he also is kind of the freak athlete. How are you not drawn towards that?
Weren't his measurables very similar and comparable to Will Anderson?
Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, I think the wingspan was even more impressive on that end. And again, Will Anderson wasn't the souped-up 6'5", 260, 4'4", you know, something just crazy absurd. I mean, obviously, he's a very, very good player, but it was not necessarily that type of combine guy.
Did his RAS score check out?
I say that in all seriousness. Yeah, I think Dallas Turner and Jared Verse both scream Colts guys. You know, when you think about Verse from Florida State, it's the speed-power combo.
Mm-hmm.
When you think about Ballard defensive ends, that's kind of what he's fallen in love with, is that combo. And if you look at the resume at Florida State, there's probably a little bit more sack pop than Quiddy Pay had at Michigan, if you're going to be honest about it. So, Eddie, if one of those two are there at 15, you know where I'm at. Like, I it is a long, long, long look. Now, again, you hear Ballard's answers about defensive end or pass rush or D-line in general, and I don't get the same level of urgency. But passing one of those two up, when you've got to be honest with yourself and say, you know, the hope is you're not drafting at 15 moving forward. You want to be deeper into round one. And those types of pass rushers, they don't sit there in the middle of round two. There's probably a wideout that's going to sit there in the middle of round two or middle of round three. It's going to have a really strong career. That's just the nature of how that position has evolved from a draft depth standpoint. So that one stood out to me late last week when those two had the types of days that they did. And, you know, where they go, I think, will be big questions. Do they fall out of the top 10? Do they get all the way to 15? Is it five quarterbacks in the first 12 picks? You know, that obviously is a huge, huge aspect to it. So that one stood out to me. A great day for the local prospects. I know you guys are going to have Tyrone Tracy Jr., the Decatur Central, the pride of your high school.
That's right.
Of Decatur Central. Fly, Hawks, fly. I have no idea if that is the right saying, but it sounded good in my head. Great day three value, I think, from a running back. And, you know, again, is that type of running back something you're looking for?
Not, he's got a history as a wide receiver. That's where he was at Iowa, and I think the first year at Purdue. And then in high school, he was 3 years at running back. Then he was kind of like that gadgety guy his senior year.
He's your third down back.
Ran
type
track.
Of thing. And Isaac Arendo out of Avon also had a great, great combine from a speed testing standpoint. Wisconsin and Louisville, his two stops collegiately for him. So both of them, and again, it's not, you know, top of the need, and, you know, maybe Evan Hall is that. Evan Hall didn't really, I mean, he's not that type of speed guy. So locally, I know our audience is not necessarily locked into the Indy area, but it's not often you have two guys from local high schools stand out to that level at the combine, and they both certainly did. So those are just a couple of combine things I wanted to make sure that we got to. And then I guess nationally, combine wise again, it's that quarterback market. And I think as you get to free agency and we get an answer on Kirk Cousins, we get an answer on Justin Fields, you know, if you are a fan of the Colts, you don't want Fields and Cousins to be going to teams drafted in the top 12. So whether you look at Minnesota or you look at Denver, you look at Atlanta, those would be some of those teams outside of the top three that you still think are quarterback centric. But still, you'd prefer them to spend a pick on that position there. Anything else combine related from you?
Brian Thomas Jr.
You liked it?
Yeah.
Doesn't he scream kind of Ballard?
Yes. I knew he was going to run in the 4-3. I didn't expect it to be 4-3, whatever, 4-3-4, whatever.
Does it mean
you're
done?
I thought it was closer to a 4-4.
Would it mean you're done with Pierce?
I'm in the camp of, with the way he was utilized last season, primarily as a guy that just ran down the field, I think that's his role. And I don't think you can have a wide receiver two with a role like that and rely on him consistently.
He would counter with, did you see the quarterback?
Who? Pierce?
Yes.
Yes.
And that Richardson would be able to better tap into the downfield strength of it. Yeah, part of me watched yesterday play out, and I'm like, you know what? If they draft a wideout at 15, does that lessen the urgency on Pittman Jr. at all for a long-term deal? Should it lessen the urgency at all?
It's a good question.
I don't think it does, but like right now the Colts have no leverage, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they got none. I mean, Pittman Jr. can say, hey, let's all sit around the fire and look at the depth chart together. Let's all watch the Atlanta game together. You've got very little leverage. If for some reason you drafted one at 15, it's a lot of eggs and obviously a rookie impact basket to, you know, bet on that right away. So you'd still be playing with fire. But for the first time in this entire process, I feel like the Colts would at least have something different on that. So, again, I bring up the hypothetical, but then I quickly say, I don't think it means a whole lot, but it's just, it's a thought that I've had.
You ready for Twitter questions?
I am.
Do have a handful. Travis, you're up first. Do you think that this now makes negotiations harder for a long-term contract based on what you said above regarding Michael Pittman Jr.
Yeah, Travis had messaged me a couple weeks ago in regards to the non-exclusive tag. And do you send, what type of message do you send to the player when you go this route? And, you know, my initial thought is, boy, aren't you creating a little bit of a sour taste by going this route? And I think I got a little too businessy with that answer. And, you know, the Colts could probably counter and say, you think you're sending a sour taste to your client. You also are giving your client a level of respect by saying, hey, man, we're letting you negotiate if you'd like. We're letting you see what is out there from a market standpoint. Not all tags are created equal, if you will. So I could look at it both ways. I tend to think business in March is probably not something to overreact to. I mean, we saw business bleed into early October with Jonathan Taylor. Don't think it had really any impact on his play once he got out there. So I probably initially overreacted a little bit to that. Again, I would like for it not to get to July. I'd like for Pittman Jr. to be out there for the spring offseason program. Is it the end of the world? No, but I think it'd be a little bit of a bummer if you were not out there. And then you just run the risk if you get to July, does that bleed into a couple days of camp? I mean, don't we see it almost every year? Mm-hmm. It seems like we do see it every year. You know, some guys, for various reasons, and not necessarily just tag guys, are holding out in some of those early days of training camp. So would that be the case with Pittman Jr.?
Jamie would like to know, if the Colts don't bring back Zach Moss, do you think they would consider bringing back Nyheim Hines after he was released by the Buffalo Bills earlier this week?
Well, Jamie, I think it's kind of what do you want? I'm like, to me, Moss and Hines are very different. You know, what do you want behind Taylor from an investment standpoint? Do you want the bell cow? Or do you want the change of pace?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you want both? And how much are you willing to invest? So to me, it's not necessarily either or with Hines or Moss. And for whatever reason, I don't know if Hines coming off the ACL is the exact investment that you want to be making. But a player like him, I'm probably more of a change of pace. I think it's good to like have the bell cow somewhere involved, but I kind of go back to a few years ago when, like, remember, like, when Jordan Wilkins was, like, the break glass emergency guy?
Yeah.
Jonathan Williams, if you want to go back a handful of years. Whereas Hines was always still the change of pace. But when Marlon Mack got hurt, they wouldn't just all of a sudden say, here you go, Hines, here's 20 carries.
Mm-hmm.
They would elevate more of the Wilkins or the Jonathan Williams and then, you know, keep Hines in that role. So
Robert Turbin?
Turbin. Short yardage Turbin. How good was he in short yardage?
Yeah.
He's doing some media stuff, isn't he?
Yeah, with NFL Network now.
Yeah, he did. I always enjoyed chatting with him. So, and I keep on coming back to Evan Hall. You know, as that fifth round pick, again, he's not necessarily the crazy jittery testing Garendo type of athlete we saw at the combine, but he certainly has a pass catching background, and you draft him in the fifth round for a reason there.
Five Twitter questions remaining. Ben would like to know your thoughts on what potential extensions could look like for Julian Blackmon and Grover Stewart. Is Julian Blackmon worth $15 to $17 million a year like the rest of the top safeties? Is Grover looking for a 1 to 2 year deal since he'll be 32 next season? Do you expect to be in the same range as his last contract? Thanks.
Boy, it's a big number he just threw out for Blackmon, isn't it?
It's rather large.
Jeez. Okay, we're a week out from free agency.
Si, senor. Six days.
Thought Pittman Jr. was going to be a guy that would return. My thoughts on the next three. And I know this isn't like percentages necessarily, because I think you can get really bogged down with the actual numerical value of the percentages. But I think at this point, I'd be surprised if Kenny Moore walked. I'd be kind of surprised if Grover Stewart walked. I wouldn't be that surprised if Julian Blackmon walked. I think that's where I've kind of settled on those next three. Now, certainly listeners of this podcast, I like all three of them. I think all three of them are very quality players. Hell, I've probably liked Blackmon maybe even the most out of those three, mm-hmm. just in his steadiness and his versatility and all of that. But I get reasons why you would let him walk. There's injury questions. And, I mean, look at how the safety market played out yesterday, Eddie. You know, what did Seattle do? They cut both of their high-priced safeties. What did the Giants do with Xavier McKinney? They did not elect to tag him. So, you know, I think teams view safety not in the exact light, but if you're making a tier of positions that just aren't viewed in the same light as others, running back, linebacker, to some teams, maybe even tight end is a position where you can get by with not investing super, super huge resource, I'd probably throw safety in there. I mean, just look at how the position's been drafted, mm-hmm. too, as of late. I mean, the Jamal Adams days are long gone of drafting them.
The Malik Hooker days.
Malik Hooker, even, yeah. So, it's more of the versatile weapon. So, you know, safety is a position where you can find. Now, I am curious, you know, Christian Wilkins didn't get tagged. What does that mean for Grover Stewart and his market? I know that it's not the exact same player, but still, that was another domino from yesterday that I was that I'm now interested to see play out.
But there were two safeties that did get tagged. Antoine Winfield and who was the other one? Because they put the transition tag.
Was it
tag.
Kyle Duggar?
Yes.
With the Patriots?
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, he was the one transition tag, right?
That is like the rarest of the rare.
Right,
those are
right.
Like rarely now, ever happen.
Now, to me, Winfield, he just falls into the, and I think the Colts felt it at times, and certainly teams have. I mean, obviously he's got corner background. I mean, he is just, to me, he's that unique type of versatile DB back there. And, you know, certainly Tampa, there are a lot of questions on what they do with Evans, what they do with Baker. And with Winfield. So, again, I know safety is not, you know, it's not running back. I don't act like it's that. But, you know, Indy's a perfect example of it. Can you go find short-term stopgap at safety? Recent history would say that you can. And all 22 positions are not created equal. So you got to do that at some spots.
And I know he's out of Cal and he was a late-round pick, but Ballard did somewhat speak highly on Nick Scott.
Daniel Scott. Yeah. He is high on him. Again, coming off of spring ACL, but yeah, that's a name worth mentioning.
Jason is up next. Shouldn't the Colts cash to cap philosophy be thrown out the window for the next few years while Anthony Richardson is on his rookie deal? They need to backload some contracts, add void years, etc., like other competitive teams are doing.
Well, the should and the will are probably two different things when it comes to that. Yeah, I mean, I wrote the story a few weeks ago, and when I tweeted it out, you know, if you just post the cap hits of Anthony Richardson for the next couple of years, Eddie, I mean, it's in the 20s when you rank him compared to other quarterbacks, and that number is only going to go down with extensions for other quarterbacks happening before Richardson would obviously get his. You have to take advantage of this period. And, you know, indirectly, I thought Chris Ballard's answer to Daniel Jeremiah and Rich Eisen, even again, very indirectly, pretty much said that. You know, they were talking to him about roster building, et cetera, et cetera. And Ballard said something to the effect of, when you start to pay the quarterback the major money, it puts more pressure on the draft. He's 1,000% right. Well, indirectly, that means when you're not paying the quarterback the big, big money, yes, the draft still matters, but there's other avenues that you can explore mm-hmm. to further build and further bolster what you've got. So, again, that is an aspect that you're living in it, and you're going to live in it, you know, for the most part, for the next couple of off seasons. Don't squander this opportunity. I know I've repeated something like this before, Eddie, but this is the fragile time for your young quarterback. Mm-hmm. At some point, you get to a point as a franchise where you need that QB to make up for other areas. Now you need to say, no, 52 guys, let's help lift that dude. Let's help get him to the level where at some point, now he's the one taking care of mom and dad, if you will. But at this point, there's still a lot of parenting going on with Anthony Richardson. And that's what you have to make sure that you don't shortcut and you don't skimp.
Hey, Kevin, I am intrigued by Brock Bowers, but not as a tight end. Since our tight end room is full of draft capital, do you think Bowers could be drafted to play wide receiver, especially if the top wide receivers, top three, Marvin Harrison Jr., Rome Odunze, and Malik Nabers are off the board? Given his yards after catchability and he reportedly runs under a 4.5 40-yard dash, he seems he could be a big play wide receiver in Shane Steichen's offense?
Yeah, I understand the question. I mean, certainly he's a versatile guy. I still think part of why you want to utilize a tight end is you throw them in a huddle, and the really versatile guys, you're not tipping your hand. Are you a runner? Are you more of a receiver? Are you more of a blocker, et cetera, et cetera? That's where I think you have to look at. So I like the versatility. I'll go back to the Shane Steichen comment yesterday. You know, you can kind of read it and think to yourself, man, is he a bad liar here and saying, yeah, Dallas Goedert, Antonio Gates, look at where I've been in my past stops. You don't think I want a bona fide tight end, but, you know, again, do you throw a middle round draft resource in there just to do it? Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think that is the proper path to go down either. To me, Bowers is just, he is such a different weapon, and I just trust Steichen to, you give him a really cool ingredient, and he's going to whip up quite the dish for you there. That's how I kind of view Bowers' situation.
Brett questions if it is possible that Michael Pittman Jr. is just refusing to entertain any offers because he genuinely just wants to see what free agency has to offer him, or is it more of just a posturing move?
It's probably a little both, but I think the former is definitely at play. I mean, I think he genuinely wants to see it. I mean, like, I get that we all have not been in that sort of situation, but I think we could probably put ourselves into those shoes and think to yourself, you know what? That would be kind of cool to see what else is out there. And then still have the ability to return to the stable, solid ground of where you've, you know, built the early part of your NFL career. I mean, it's not like Michael Pittman Jr.'s got any ties to this area. I mean, it's not like, you know, there is some emotional investment here by any means to that. I do think he really likes it, but still, I mean, you know, this is a West Coast guy who grew up out there and, you know, his family's out there, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm sure there's a little bit of both of that. You know, he's still really desperate, though, to the Colts. I mean, mm-hmm. like, the Colts really, really need him. And, you know, Andy Sweeney, our morning co-host, and I, we went back and forth a little bit. Andy's like, well, I think he means more to the Colts than others. Yes, but if you're just going to debate, does Michael Pittman Jr. mean more to the Colts, or do the Colts mean more to Michael Pittman Jr.? Michael Pittman Jr. means more to the Colts. I don't think there's any debating of that whatsoever. So I look at this as just kind of very March business, and as long as you give him proper compensation, I think he'll be a really, really good pro for you moving forward.
Final Twitter question comes from Austin. Hey, Kevin, not Colts related, but being from Iowa, I'm a huge Caitlin Clark fan. How do you feel about her coming to the Fever?
I love it. Absolutely love it. I'm probably heavily biased. You know, when that announcement happened late one afternoon last week, Eddie, I kind of ran downstairs and said to my wife, I'm like, hey, you know, Caitlin Clark declared for the draft. I mean, it's coming up in a month and a half. Fever going to take her number one. This is, you know, great, great news.
Well, maybe. They may take her. We don't know yet.
And she goes, oh, I already know. My friend Caroline is hosting a WNBA draft party and all daughters involved. And I'm like, that's freaking awesome. Like, I mean, think about how many times I've positioned myself and been like, man, I can't wait to do this with Max. I can't wait to do this with, like, my son. And now, and who knows, maybe Rosie will hate sports. But for her to have someone in this market, and I know Aaliyah Boston could be viewed in a very similar light as well, you know, to have those role models, it's rather indescribable. And I know there's times you could speak in hyperbole about this, but, I mean, Eddie, I was born in 1989. And if you look at when Reggie Miller was drafted and what he meant to me, and again, I'm not even talking about Peyton, you know, when I was 9 years old when Peyton was drafted, Reggie was much more already in those prime years when I was, you know, 6, 7, 8. And as I watch my nephew and, you know, project my kids into those ages, that's the formative time. And all of a sudden, if you could have a girl like Caitlin Clark offer a role model for Rosie, was Rosie's about to turn 4. I mean, that's monumental.
Mm-hmm.
and really, really cool if she wants to pursue that route. So again, heavily biased and selfishly, I think it's absolutely awesome. Cannot wait to see the impact. I do want to go back to the Aaliyah Boston thing. And again, for those that don't follow the WNBA very closely or don't follow the Fever, the Pacers drafted Aaliyah Boston number one overall last year.
The Pacers did?
The Fever did.
Damn, I was like, whoa, that'd be news to me.
6'5 post player.
Over Victor Wembanyama, what are we doing here?
And if you talk to people around affiliated with the Fever, I mean, I had someone, because I wanted to make sure that we focus on this the morning after the Clark Declaration happened. I go, can you kind of put it in NBA terms, Aaliyah Boston? And this person's like, I'm glad you asked. Aaliyah Boston's better than Caitlin Clark.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she is Tim Duncan, was an NBA comp that someone made to me. And so to think about that, I mean, you've drafted in back-to-back drafts, you know, whatever, the closest thing to Steph Curry and Tim Duncan. You think that helps your franchise rebuild? And it's also going to be in a time period, Eddie, where you know how our market works. Mid-May to mid-September is usually relatively quiet in the sports calendar world. We don't have Major League Baseball in this market. So that is also a time.
At least not successful.
Well, you know what I mean. Nothing close by.
Exactly.
So I just think it's really, really cool that we naturally gravitate towards, whether it's sex, whether it's race, whether it's size of a human, you kind of gravitate towards people that are like-minded with you. Like, I think that's why you see the craze for Steph Curry more than Nikola Jokic or Joel Embiid. Kids can go out in their driveway and act like they're Steph. It's hard to act like you're Jokic or you're Embiid, you know? So I think that's the difference a little bit with Caitlin Clark and Aaliyah Boston. You know, not many females that turn out to be 6'5". There's a decent amount, not a ton, but you got a better chance to be 5'11", like Caitlin Clark is. And, you know, to be able to, again, mimic some of that, you have that ability. So, I don't know. It's probably a little bit of the emotional dad coming out in me when I saw this news, but I'm thrilled about it. And I think it's really, really cool. And whether you want to look there or look at Tyrese Haliburton or look at the potential of Anthony Richardson, what a time. I mean, without Reggie Miller, without Peyton Manning, I don't have this job. I don't. I don't think my passion and my craze for sports is at the level that it clearly is. Some would say unhealthy level, but...
No, unhealthy is Tiger Woods and Notre Dame. Well, that's sure. Unhealthy.
Yeah, that is extremely un. Yeah, that's call your doctor after a few hours.
Did you watch last night?
Unhealthy. I did some multitasking. I wasn't too pleased with the result for the Irish, but it has been much better as of late. But North Carolina's in a different class.
Did you give up? Did you turn it off at all?
I did. I did bail a little
bit. Wow.
They did cut it to 20 at one point. I'm like, are they going to cover here? 15 and a half was the line, but no, they did not. So yeah, it was ugly last night in Chapel Hill. So
quickly, Austin had a part two.
Oh,
How do you feel about Cooper DeHaan out of Iowa joining the Colts at 15?
Yeah, I mean, you talk about a versatile defensive back. You talk about a guy you could line up in a lot of spots. You know, 15, maybe. If Kenny Moore walked, maybe you could talk me into it. Again, just a hair too luxury for me. That's where I'll go. But damn good football player. Damn. I mean, Iowa had him, and Iowa had the punter. That's what Iowa had. That's pretty much Iowa football for you on that. Eddie Garrison, anything else from you?
Nope. Coming back in a week after day one, technically, a free agency that starts Tuesday, right?
The official league year starts Wednesday. The legal tampering starts Monday.
Okay, that's right.
They're all in quotes. To be a TBD and TBA. To be determined and to be announced. I don't know. Monday could be a flurry. Monday could be nothing. I feel like free agency week, it's always hit or miss, you know? If some of your in-house guys all of a sudden sign elsewhere, I mean, that's news. So, I don't know. Maybe a Tuesday, Friday, maybe a Tuesday, Thursday. I don't know. If you could be flexible, that'd be great.
All those combine negotiations come public on Monday and certainly on Wednesday.
That they do. He is Eddie Garrison. I'm Kevin Bowen. Everybody have a great week. We'll chat with you at some point next week about free agency.